Omaha Public Radio presents another program from Film Streams, Omaha's nonprofit cinema on Noon Forum. On today's program, we'll hear a panel discussion which followed a special screening of the 2011 documentary film Urbanized, directed by Gary Hustwit. This program was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Wednesday evening, February 1st, 2012, for broadcast at this time. The opinions expressed are those of the panelists and do not necessarily represent those of Film Streams, KIOS-FM, or the Omaha Public School District. Over half the world's population now lives in an urban area, and 75% will call a city home by 2050. But while some cities are experiencing growth, others are shrinking. The challenges of balancing housing, mobility, public space, civic engagement, economic development, and environmental policy are fast becoming universal concerns. Yet much of the dialogue on these issues is disconnected from the public domain. In the third installment of his design film trilogy, Hustwit engages some of the world's foremost architects, planners, policymakers, builders, and thinkers about the issues and strategies behind urban design. By exploring a diverse range of urban design projects around the world, Urbanized frames a global discussion on the future of cities. The members of the panel will include Rick Cunningham, Planning Director for the City of Omaha, Sloan Dawson, Transportation Planner at the Metropolitan Area Planning Agency, Ann Trumbull, Founder and Executive Director of Emerging Terrain, and Othello Meadows, Executive Director of 75 North Revitalization Corporation. Here now to introduce the panel is our moderator, Hesse McGraw, Chief Curator at the Bemis Center for Contemporary Arts.
I'll make very quick introductions, and then we'll begin by turning the floor to them. I'd like to start just by hearing about current initiatives that each of you are engaged with in your daily lives. So Sloan Dawson is a transportation planner with MAPA. Ann Trumbull is the founder and executive director of Emerging Terrain. Othello Meadows is the executive director of 75 North Revitalization Corporation. And Rick Cunningham is the director of Omaha City Planning. Sloan, perhaps you could begin.
Sure. Well, I work for the Metropolitan Area Planning Agency, and we are the Metropolitan Planning Organization and the Council of Governments for the Omaha Metropolitan Region, which includes Council Bluffs, it includes the cities of Sarpy County, and Washington County as well. And we have a number of really interesting and exciting initiatives starting this year and actually unfolding over several years, one of which is a regional vision. Essentially looking at a 40-year time horizon for how we as a metropolitan area want to grow. It's an initiative that's unprecedented in our history in both spatial scale in terms of covering, actually for the regional vision, we're covering 8 counties, the entire metropolitan statistical area, but also in sort of the temporal scale too, really looking far into the future. And as part of that, we're also engaging in some interesting transportation planning initiatives, including looking at the future form of transit in our region, as well as putting together a spine of bicycle, pedestrian, and complete streets facilities that really connect our region together well. So that's kind of the overview of what I'm working on. Anne?
Ooh, that's hard to follow up. I am the director of a small beginning nonprofit called Emerging Terrain. And before this endeavor, I spent about 15 years practicing landscape architecture. So traditionally looking at designing and building static spaces. And so Emerging Terrain is a little bit different of a beast. You might know us for the banners hanging on the grain elevator off of I-80. We operate with a mission to engage the public in factors shaping the built environment. And we really love to take spaces and places and structures in the city and kind of reposition them or do temporary interventions in them that change how people interact with those places, spaces, and structures. We have a project that will happen in May with the Greater Omaha Chamber, where we have designed these platform planter seating units that will inhabit parking spaces along Leavenworth Street downtown east of the interstate. And that project is really a way to temporarily, because that is typically not offensive to anyone when it can go away, but a way to really draw people out into the space of that street and experience and imagine what it could be. So that's a kind of short description of what we do and who we are.
My name is Othello Meadows. I'm the executive director of 75 North Revitalization Corporation. And 75 North is kind of a play on, obviously, Highway 75, the North Freeway, a wildly unpopular project when it happened. And still, people harbor a lot of hard feelings about that. And I thought that naming our organization 75 North was a way to kind of recapture that and reclaim the negativity and turn that into something positive for that neighborhood. As that corridor is going to be really important to what we're doing. And what that is we are focused primarily and solely on one neighborhood and turning that neighborhood into a place that is kind of a springboard of success rather than a kind of a virtual prison. So what we're doing is trying to facilitate the building of mixed-income housing and the construction of kind of a cradle-to-college educational pipeline. Those two things working independent of each other are shown to kind of be marginally effective, but working together they've been shown to create tremendous change in neighborhoods and communities. So we're trying to do our part right up the street at 30th and Parker, the former site of Pleasant View Homes. So that's what I do.
How much time did I have? I'm with the planning department. We do a lot. And it's fun. People ask me, how's it going? I said, it's going pretty good. They say, are you keeping busy? Don't have a problem keeping busy. We work with all these folks here. We work with a lot of you in partnerships to make this a better city, to make this a sustainable city, to keep it the city that it is and to improve upon it. Some of the things that haven't been talked about that we're working on is a transportation plan update of our master plan, the element update. And one of the things that I think is exciting about that is some of the dialogue about the connectiveness of our city, not only by vehicle but pedestrian and otherwise. And the concept of taking a dysfunctional bikeway and try to make it a functional bikeway connections east, west, north, and south. The idea of the Harney Street Bikeway is exciting that we're beginning to look at. Some people came to the mayor and talked about a greenway between downtown and Midtown Crossing. Sometime before that concept came forward, and the mayor asked me about that, and I said, well, to put a Leahy Mall type greenway between downtown and Midtown maybe is not the right solution, but could we look at it kind of like the way we're looking at it with a Harney Bikeway, with a green pathway, pocket parks, still having other kinds of development, mixed use going on. And that's why I'm excited about the Harney Bikeway, because that's kind of what we had envisioned. In that same area, it's what I'm calling the near downtown area, west of downtown, in between Midtown and downtown. There's a proposed study to look at how we implement the downtown master plan in that area. There is a developer who's in the audience that has purchased a particular asset, I think most of us know as the old Enron Tower, Northern Natural Gas Tower. That may be the catalyst project for that area that might help us then to realize some of the dreams and vision for that area. Crossroads, that's exciting. We're fighting now to get the wherewithal to be able to invest in something like a new reinvigorated crossroads that's connected by something else we're getting ready to look at, and that's the alternative analysis for the Midtown downtown corridor, which most of you probably know that we've extended through other fundraising all the way out 72nd and down to Exarban Village. so that we can begin looking at a spine of a future very effective mass transit public transportation network within the city. So we're working on that. We're working on the North Omaha Village Revitalization Plan with this man here and others, OEDC, and SE and others, about the possibility of a reinvestment in North Omaha. We're working in South Omaha. We were just talking today about a TIF district that we are not a TIF district, excuse me. Don't want to misquote a community redevelopment area around the Vinton, 24th Street, Vinton Street corridor, working with the Chamber on that South Omaha development project plan that's been put in place. I could go on and on. There's a lot that we're working on, just the day-to-day working with developers who come in and trying to help them make sure that the neighborhoods that they're planning is connected with other neighborhoods that exist around by pedestrian pathways, sidewalks. It's kind of surprising when people come in and fight and say, my kids are walking in the streets, and that's not safe. But at the same point in time, they won't pay for sidewalks so their kids can walk on sidewalks, or they don't want the sidewalks in their neighborhood or near their neighborhood. So we're constantly working with those developers to implement the visions in the comprehensive plan that we have, the urban design element, which I think is great if we can get them fully implemented everywhere. So that's only a few things. And if for all of my staff, if I didn't touch on your projects, I'm sorry. But they're all important.
I'd like to zoom out. You know, I think one of the kind of phenomenal things about the expansiveness of the film is that it illustrates, you know, both the magic and horror of successful and unsuccessful urban places and cities. It shows cities that are in the throes of rapid expansion, rapid shrinking. I'd like to pose a question to you guys and to the audience. Is Omaha a contemporary city? Is it a 21st century city? Argue one way or the other. If it's not 21st century, what are the kind of ambitions that would lead it to becoming so?
Crack at that first.
Right.
I'm not going to
volunteer. The next one's going to be harder.
Personal opinion is just that I would say it's not a contemporary city. I say that from the time I left here when I was 18 to the time I returned about 3 years ago, it's improved by leaps and bounds. I mean, it's a much different city than it was, you know, 15 years ago. However, I still see, a lot of this is prefaced by what you consider contemporary and what definition we're using of that, but. You know, I think of the issues that we have with mass transit. I think of the way that there's still this reluctance of Omahaans to live in and around areas that contain people who are different from them. You know, when I see that makes me remember kind of why I left Omaha in the first place, although I see that kind of slowly changing. But it's really hard to kind of get past that realization that we still live in a city that that takes great pains not to live around people who are different from them. And I guess that's part of my definition of a contemporary city. And I think on that front, we probably have a good little ways to go.
I mean, personally, I don't think that Omaha has a choice in the matter. It has to be a contemporary city. And if it isn't, what is the opposite of a contemporary city? A dead city. You know, I mean, it's cities throughout history, and every single city that was presented in this film, with the possible exception of Phoenix, has been confronted with a major crisis and has had to adapt. And the measure of what makes a city a contemporary city or a city that survives the ages, that endures the ages, its ability to adapt. And there are certain attributes of adaptable cities, and I think Othello has struck upon certainly the tolerance for difference, not just tolerance, but embrace of difference. And I think that, you know, we are in such an interesting moment in world history, in the history of our region, in our country, that we really have to kind of be bold and think new, think at a large scale. And if we don't do that, then we're going to fall apart. I mean, that's really, it's as straightforward as that. When you think about how much the structure of everything has changed, I mean, with the internet, with the opening of borders and the movement of capital across national boundaries into cities, into different areas, and how fluid that is, you know, a city doesn't have a choice in whether to be contemporary or not. It has to be, or it dies. So I guess that's me.
I guess I'm going to maybe take a little bit of a different take on it. I too left the city for 16 years and came back, and I ended up on the East Coast in D.C., beautiful city to visit, wouldn't want to live there. Lived in Richmond, an interesting place to end up as an African-American in the capital of the Confederate States. Lived in Kansas City, and my wife and I, when I joined Parsons Brinckerhoff, my wife is a thinker, so she said, where are we going to move when Parsons Brinckerhoff asks you to move? I said, well, what do you mean? Well, every company you go to asks you to move. So we had to have a discussion about where we would move, and the two cities we decided we would move to was Kansas City and Omaha. I think Omaha represents the best and the worst of all that you saw on the screen. I think we have tremendous opportunities, and I'm an optimistic kind of person. I see Omaha has so much possibilities. We're working on so many things to make this a better city across the board, from border to border, we can learn from everything that we saw up here, from the super large cities to the small cities. How can we capture all of that and bring it to Omaha? I think we are at a size where we can really benefit from all of that. I mean, we're not too small, but we can't benefit from what happens in the larger cities, and we're not too large that we can't benefit from what has happened and continues to happen positively, I mean, in smaller cities. So I think that we are at a tipping point, and we're at a key point to make decisions as a city, all of us, of what we will be in the future. In 1974, the city, everybody in the city made a decision about a downtown that was getting close to what Kansas City was. At 5 o'clock, the sidewalks rolled up, and it was gone. When I came back, I was surprised, greatly surprised, pleased with a downtown that was coming back, that, well, was back, actually. I mean, doesn't mean we don't have a lot that we can do to continue to do in downtown, but it's not like a lot of cities. We've got opportunities in the north downtown area. We've got tremendous opportunities. In the 16th and Cumming area of the North Omaha Village Plan, we've got tremendous opportunities. So I see that we have tremendous opportunities. This is a contemporary city because we are still in existence. We are not a ghost town out there. And so as the glass half full, it's what we make it in the future. And that, you know, that goes from low tech to high tech. The one thing I forgot to talk about is our sustainability office and the kinds of programs that are being implemented there, from city buildings to the green zone houses and businesses. So there's a lot going on. We've got programs like No More Empty Pots, urban agriculture, and how we implement that, continue to implement it in the city, because there's a lot of that going around. It's surprising how many community gardens are existing. You saw that one guy in Detroit. We've got those in Omaha, and very successful in Omaha. How do we build on that? I've heard of chickens in Omaha. We have this in Omaha. So it's a tremendous melting pot here, and probably the best place in the whole world for it to happen, right here in the middle of the country. And I think that's kind of contributes to the fact that we've weathered the storm here in the economic downturn here of the last 5 years is because of the kind of city that we are, that we're not so far one direction or another. So I think we just need to build on that. I'll try not to talk so much.
It's my turn. I think Omaha is absolutely contemporary in that it has all the same challenges of every other city. A downtown that struggles to reinvigorate itself with the opposing force of thriving suburbs. I think piggybacking on what Rick said, the great thing about Omaha is that it's such a manageable size. To really experiment and reimagine what a smaller contemporary city could be.
I think I'd like to maybe talk about a question of priorities moving forward, moving into the future. Omaha is not an equitable city. I think many of its inequities play out geographically, socially, by race, by class. Many of the urban planning, city planning decisions that were made in the 60s and 70s played a kind of invisible, forceful hand in establishing certain inequities. That's one thing. We're about to enter a presidential election where there will be a debate over whether global warming exists. That's another thing. Education is a thing. Transportation. How do we begin to kind of prioritize strategies around invigorating Omaha as a small Midwestern contemporary city that epitomizes many of the successes and failures of contemporary America?
You were right about that.
Can you clarify your question?
I want to ask about priorities. You know, one of the things that I was laughing about when the Tulane professor or dean or whoever he was kind of belittling Brad Pitt's project is he was saying they didn't think about landscape. They didn't think about the social. They thought about a kind of beautiful architectural moment, but they didn't think about the other piece. So how do we think about Omaha holistically? And begin to address its.
You know, I remember from 10th grade psychology class, and you learn about Maslow and this hierarchy of needs, and you know, the most basic things being critical to taking the next step in self-actualization. And, you know, when I was watching, I think the mayor from, I don't know if it was Santiago, but, you know, he really was eloquent in the way he talked about freedom of movement and freedom of the person who has the least among us being able to access what he or she needs to live her life, his or her life, in a more fulfilled way. And, you know, the same thing in South Africa and in Cape Town, where, you know, we're just talking about moving people safely from one area to another area. You know, so when I think about our priorities, I think about education, and I think about mass transportation, and I think about the things that make people's lives on a daily basis easier or harder. You know, and that's kind of the baseline question. You know, does our approach to mass transportation make this person's life easier or harder? You have tremendous job growth in Southwest Omaha. You have tremendous unemployment in Northeast Omaha, and it's very difficult to get from Northeast Omaha to Southwest Omaha using mass transportation. So, you know, I think if we look at the baseline question for all these great issues as, are we making these things easier or more difficult for kind of the least among us, and I mean that in an asset-driven way. If we're not making those things easier for them, I think that, you know, we've kind of shot for the wrong priority.
I think something that's very interesting that's sort of implicit in the question is that we're talking about things that are, they're, I don't know, intangible goods, and they're based in human empathy, human needs, the hierarchy of needs. But the way that we deliver services is through systems. And, you know, there's been kind of a hullabaloo lately about this psychology professor or whatever, well, not hullabaloo, but in England, who's come up with this sort of, you know, empathy systematizing sort of personality typology, and, you know, trying to fit people on the spectrum. And I think it's a very interesting model, even though binaries are dangerous. But, you know, it's an interesting way of conceptualizing, okay, do we have, you know, we have systems, we have a transportation system, we have an educational system, and, you know, our laws, you know, what sort of make us, you know, an interesting experiment in political science and government is that laws apply equally, and that's a very systematizing approach to everyone. But at the same time, we're a very empathy-oriented. So it's, you know, what's so interesting about each and every one of these projects that were presented is that someone stepped back and said, okay, we have human needs, and we need to find a way to orient the system or design the system around delivering those needs in a way that maximizes each individual's ability to live their life, to live a comfortable life, a safe life. And I think, you know, we've sort of set up these proximate policies and whatnot that really are oriented toward one way of accomplishing that. And our challenge, it's actually, it's a strategic challenge, right? Because we simply can't afford to support this one way of life by any measure. So I think our challenge is to find a way to balance things out. And I personally have some ideas. And on Omaha, what makes Omaha so great from a pure city planning standpoint is that it's just an orthogonal grid, you know, and there's very few geographic you know, barriers. So it's very simple to create networks and to create sort of a hierarchy of, from a mass transit system perspective, a hierarchy of service, and, you know, really kind of, you know, create, I don't know, you could think of it as a market of ways that you can access these trunks, these transit services along major spines or arterials. And, you know, that's really where the potential of, you know, a market-based approach, like, you know, for some people who are able-bodied, you know, and who want or need the exercise, or they live in a flat part of the city, bike is a great way to get to the trunk line, let's say. But for others, it's not as much of an option. So it's sort of, you know, complexifying in a way the systems, but at a manageable scale and pace, and that's kind of what, I don't know, I think that's kind of what makes systems more human, because we're all complex people. We have different needs and different days, and so, you know, our systems need to sort of reflect that, I guess. Sorry.
For me, your question about prioritizing, I think that's the problem. The problem that I see, though, is you can start almost anywhere and make a case that any point that you are is important. You know, there are some who says jobs, jobs, jobs. That's important. But if you don't have people who are educated and prepared to do the jobs, it doesn't matter how many jobs you create if you don't have people to do the job. So then that education. And so the education. But if people don't have a good place to live and they can't feed their families, you know, then they can't afford to go to school, and they're not prepared for the jobs. You know, and if they can't get to the work because you don't have an effective transportation system, whether it be a car or a bus or a bike or a motorcycle or your feet or whatever, and you don't have the ability to have the choice to do it, that doesn't work. So when you say prioritize, tell me what is the number one priority and where do you start? Because every time you look at a different issue, that's an important issue, and it we need to solve it. And it's not that, in my mind, it's not that any one is more important than the other. It's just kind of where you start on the cycle, you know. And so, I mean, when you ask what's the most important, I don't know that I can tell you. Mm-mm. Because it just kind of depends on what day of the week I'm going to the office and who's there, sitting there waiting to talk about their particular problem. Whether that's the most important, or if we started and could solve that problem, it wouldn't solve some others.
I'm sort of curious, and this gets into that question of priority, but, you know, my experience or perspective, I guess, on Omaha, and I think it's been getting better, but a lot of, you know, sort of urban planning and development and all these issues get driven by profitability and money opposed to, you know, is this going to better the lives of citizens of Omaha? Is it going to integrate Omaha? Is it going to be inclusive to everyone in Omaha? And, you know, even the kind of bright spots that you mentioned at the beginning of the discussion are, you know, downtown directly west out to the suburbs, which in my experience benefits one very single demographic of people that live in Omaha. So how do we change the discussion from, you know, profitability to inclusion and sustainability and betterment of everyone's lives, as opposed to the bottom line of tourism dollars or, you know, companies coming into Omaha and hiring people and things like that? You know, how do we include what's already here into that development and planning? You know, and I guess just perspective on that.
Is that a particular question to me or just the whole panel?
For all of you guys.
Okay, thank
I mean,
you very
I think,
much.
You know, like money drives what happens in this town, and money comes from, you know, rich people, and they serve themselves. They don't serve anybody else.
I will fill that one first. And that's kind of what I was saying. I mean, the example of what's going on in the corridor that we talked about, yes, that's just kind of driven by jobs. It's driven by increasing sales tax, cutting down retail going out of the city so that we have more sales tax so that we can do some of those things, invest more in North Omaha, invest more in South Omaha, invest more in housing, in the kinds of projects that make sense, that help people, provide culture, opportunities to experience culture, to participate in culture. But it comes down to, okay, how do you fund those things? And how do you give people an opportunity to participate, either through their money or through their sweat equity? So you're absolutely right. That's what I was saying, jobs, and you hear that over and over again. That's the way to come out of everything and solve everything. Maybe it does, but you've got to have a cadre of people who are then willing to invest what they get off of those jobs and off of that economic development back into the community to make it a better place.
You know, I'm kind of a firm believer that for depressed communities to really enjoy the economic revival and renaissance that Omaha has enjoyed forever, that you have to embrace the fact that money drives everything. I think as long as depressed communities in the city are dependent upon philanthropic dollars and charity or investment for the sake of it's the right thing to do, I think those communities will always be kind of second-class communities in the city. I think that those communities have to be enveloped into the entire economic machine. I think that saying that we like everything to be more altruistic, I think that's absolutely correct. But I don't think it's the reality of where we live, and I don't think it's the reality of this country. And so I think finding creative ways for people to make money and also do things that have a community benefit. For example, when we get to the point where we're actually developing something, the developer we hire will have a track record of hiring people from that community. We'll partner with the community college to train people ahead of time so that they're ready to take those jobs. I can't ask a developer to come in and do that and not make money. And I'm not going to get somebody to develop something of equal quality in North Omaha that I would get that they would develop in West Omaha if that developer is not going to realize a significant profit. So for us, it's a matter of seeking out opportunities to marry those two interests. And we've seen it done before where there's the opportunity to do well and do well. And I can't begrudge anybody for their desire to make money in a capitalistic society. Until that changes, I really just feel that that's going to change. I mean, that's going to drive everything. And as long as we're dependent on philanthropy and charity, you know, North Omaha, parts of South Omaha will always be seen as kind of a second-class community. And I think it's more a matter of helping those communities understand how to maximize the assets within those communities rather than asking everyone else to kind of change the rules, you know, for them. So
there was a mayor in early on in the film that said that they were seeking an ethic where public good prevails over private interest. You know, I mean, to your point, Othello and Rob, you know, is that an ethic that we seek in Omaha? I actually don't know. I think Omaha is very good, has been very good about leveraging public-private partnerships, maybe seemingly for public good, but perhaps there's a little bit of private interest thrown in.
Sure.
You know, in a city where there are more millionaires per capita and also more, a greater percentage of black children living in poverty than any other city in the country, how do you begin to address that directly? And Othello, to your point, is capitalism the mechanism to find equity?
I don't know that we have too many other choices. You know, I don't think that we're going to have a revolution anytime soon. We've seen how a large portion of the country feels about anything resembling socialism. So, or if they knew what that meant. But I think that it's really important to figure out ways within the construct that we live in to make those things happen. You see, a lot of these millionaires are getting older and are kind of retiring from that kind of public life, that kind of philanthropic life, right? You know, and I just think it's really tenuous to depend on their children or to depend on whatever mechanism they've left in place for distributing their money to continue to kind of carry us in this fight. And I think, you know, really a topic I've talked about before is us having the will to say, you know, this public good, whether it's education or whatever, we'll use that example, is important enough for us to say that, as a society, within our capitalistic society, we're going to make sure, just like we make sure that when a highway needs to get built, it gets built. Plot that somebody has for putting a colony on the moon, whatever, right? These things have to be at least as important as that societally, you know. But I really think that the philanthropic and charitable outlook towards it is one that's doomed to fail.
Quite frankly, I think we need all of it working together in partnerships, like public-private partnerships. The kind of analogy I'd like to use is a tapestry is made up of a lot of different threads, and they come together and they make something, a whole that's a lot greater than the sum of the parts. So I think there's room for all of the above to make this a sustainable city of Omaha, a great city of Omaha that can lead the nation. I think it takes all of it.
Both the discussion that you've raised about the inequities in this system and tying in with the gentleman from MAPPA who mentioned binaries can be dangerous, which I don't even know what binaries are, but so can systems. Systems aren't by their nature benign or benevolent. Systems work or they don't work. And in this city, and I'm old, so I go way back. I go back to the Carver Greenfield plant, which was a decision made by city officials to build a facility for private industry to generate jobs that didn't work and was torn down 3 years after it was built before the bonds were paid off. The citizens of Omaha paid bonds for like 13 more years. And how many people in this room even remember that at all? So my concern is, how is the process structured? And if what we want is what I want, what you want, and I want what the planning department obviously wants the city to grow and be sustainable, then I think we have to get really serious about how do we address these issues, and in particular the plan that the MAPPA fellow was talking about. What is your public information component for that plan? Because the first I heard of it was like 5 days ago, and no one seems to know anybody anything about it anywhere I go, as well as the solid waste management plan that MAPPA is working with the city. Nobody knows anything about that either. And what is the public participation component of these activities so that people are, that are working in the community, living in the community, and dealing with these problems day to day? I deal with unemployed minority workers over 55. Half the people that have come through my cube used to work in the EPA's lead abatement program, and they were making like $19 an hour. And now they're applying for general assistance because they simply cannot find jobs. So what are we doing as far as getting into the community and finding out what they want instead of developing these wonderful funded plans that we then put down over the northeast part of town like a bell jar, which has never worked before. It isn't going to work now. So what are we going to do to change that? That's my question.
Sure. I'd be happy to address that. So this effort is qualitatively different. And actually what won us the grant to support it is a very different approach to a plan. For one thing, it's not really a master plan in the classic sense of sort of drawing, you know, polygons on a map and sort of saying, you know, that this exact type of facility is going to happen here and whatnot. It's actually trying to tease out principles to urban growth and getting people to understand, you know, the principles of urban growth, the trade-offs associated with different decisions, and to really kind of, you know, find ways that these systems that you talk, which systems, you're right, they are by their nature, they can be dehumanizing. So what are ways that the physical infrastructural systems, the way that we configure that, impact outcomes in for people trying to seek jobs, people trying to access educational opportunities? The reason why you haven't heard as much about it yet is that we don't even have a contract from HUD. So until we have a contract in place from HUD, we can't really start on the effort. So once we have that in place, then you'll be hearing more. And really the entire approach to this project, to this process, is based on community input. And we've proposed actually as part of the budget, a special set aside to essentially work through community partners, neighborhood associations, civic groups, and, you know, supplying them with kind of a basic rubric of what are some ways to guide this conversation, but really starting out with that, like working in sort of a decentralized manner through organizations that are embedded in their communities and getting a good idea of what people perceive throughout the region to be the issues and the opportunities, and then to start applying some of the data that we gather as a planning agency and comparing perception and what at least how we currently measure reality, what that says. That's really the first phase. The second phase is to try to, using this tool called scenario planning, where it's almost like SimCity, where you're able to kind of create mock-ups for how some of these, you know, how densities might change, might impact transportation form. Let's say how decisions on where to extend sewer lines and other infrastructure affect costs, public costs, in the short term and the long term. These issues are really complex issues, and it's going to be a challenge to find a way to communicate it, get people to understand it. But you know, this isn't just a static, you know, exercise in trying to just impose a vision on the city. It's getting everyone for the first time to be thinking about the long term and at a larger scale what we want to look like. So
I have a final two questions, and they're short. You know, there was something that I wanted to acknowledge in the comment about systems. I think often the reason that systems fail is because they forget about the people that are at their core. There was a comment early in the film about the magic of cities is in the unexpected. It's in the surprise. It's in the kind of anomaly, which the anomalies of cities are often intensely people-driven. Mm-hmm. They're pragmatic. They're interventions. They're small scale. It's a kind of moment that you don't expect you happen upon it. It's insurgent. I'd like to ask the panelists, what is the anomaly or the magical surprise about Omaha that you think about and love?
It's funny, I've been sitting here trying to compare Omaha to the projects in the movie, and every single project, every case study in there was fundamentally about a generous public space or the establishing of a generous public space and how those surprises and serendipity and leaving your house in the morning not knowing what you're going to encounter. It's like living in New York City. I mean, that's a example of that. And I think that's the big priority question that Omaha might have for itself in the future. What do our public spaces look like? Where are they located? I'm not sure that we really even know where they are right now, other than Jean Leahy Mall, maybe some streetscapes, Memorial Park. I don't know.
Turner Park.
I think there's actually quite a lot in the city of Omaha. The boulevards and the park system that the city has is probably one of the best around, and we need to invest more in them and maintain them and bring them back to the full vibrancy that they have the potential. But I mean, right now I think there's an effort to actually put the boulevard system on the National Register of Historic Places. I'm surprised it isn't, but I think that's a tremendous, and you talk about all the opportunities that this city, this region has taken to create open space like our dams that are multifaceted, and hopefully they'll never get to the point where we have to have the Corps manage them like the Missouri River, and we have to fight between recreation and flood control, but hopefully we can continue to do it as a partnership. But I think also the Old Market is a tremendous place that's developed over time, a lot of cities have them, but you know, this is a jewel of the city of Omaha. And we I think, you know, I lived in Kansas City, and then I went out east, and I have the zoo, the Henry Dorley Zoo is for a long time I've said that is a zoo that Omaha didn't deserve, but because of where we were and the corporate people and other people that are here gave it to the city, you know, the Wild Kingdom. I grew up with Wild Kingdom, you know, and that's one of the reasons we have the zoo that we have. I think that's an opportunity. You know, the Rosenblatt's not there anymore. Well, it is, but I think that's an opportunity for us to build on. And how do we force multiply with the zoo, with the botanical gardens. I went to Atlanta at the end of last year, and the meeting was in their botanical gardens. It was fabulous. I mean, I didn't walk through the whole thing, but what I saw of it, it was great. And we have that potential here with the Lawrence and Gardens. So I think that we have a lot of things. Is what are we going to do with them? What are we going to do with them as we go forward? I think that's key. I don't know if that really answered your question. somebody talked about, you know, the planning and plans that go on the shelves and don't and in North Omaha is, you know, 50 years. That's what I heard when I came back here, is 50 years of plans and 50 years of dust. I think that my hope is that the North Omaha Village Revitalization Plan is different, that it was an extreme effort to bring that up from the grassroots up. I saw a lot of people, not as many as I would have liked to see, certainly more than I've seen in, say, our transportation master plan that was for the whole city. In those public meetings and those endeavors, roll up your sleeves and communicate what you want. I saw 700, 800 people at North High time and time again. And so I think that has a tremendous potential. If we keep that kind of effort going forward, and then we open the doors for force multiplication with everybody else to come in into North Omaha and then into South Omaha to basically build on those foundations, and I think they are foundations. There's opportunity for our city as we look at how we further develop, redevelop in the future in the eastern part. There's almost 16,000 vacant lots, condemned facilities, unfit and unsafe facilities in North and South Omaha. That's an opportunity to reinvest and attract people to the eastern part of the city, and I think that's what we need to do in order to make sure that we maintain a sustainable city of Omaha. And I use the word attract because we're not going to force people to come to North and South Omaha. We have to attract them, and I like to think about attraction from three perspectives. Attract people who live there, who we get those jobs to and get educated so that they can make a living wage and better, so they don't move out, that they're attracted to stay. The people who live there made more money and moved out, maybe get attracted to move back, and then attract people who wouldn't have imagined 5 years ago that they might consider moving to North Omaha because there's a variety of housing types and lifestyles available in North Omaha. They choose to move back because there's a strong cultural opportunity in North Omaha to get rooted back into the history of the city. How many people here knew that the World's Fair was in North Omaha? Okay, that's great. Did you know I went to Horseman Junior High School? I looked out on that doggone Coons Park, and I never knew that the World's Fair was there. You know, just wasn't talked about. I was right across the street. So there's history in North and South Omaha that we can build on, and I'm preaching, so let me just stop.
I still live there, by the way. So.
I have a question about something that I haven't heard anyone talk about so far. It has to do with energy use in cities. I did see one scene in the movie, I think it was in the part in Columbia, where they were using what appeared to be some sort of smart grid to manage electrical systems across the city. And there was quite a bit about automobile use, and as far as energy use for a city, automobile use and time, that's certainly significant. But outside of transportation issues, the largest sector of energy use is bound up in electrical systems involved in heating and air conditioning for buildings, homes, and offices. I'm wondering, and I hear a lot in the past several years about talk about smart grids for managing electricity load in cities, and that's why this scene caught my eye. I'd like to know if the panel could speak to this issue of smart grid technology, whether it is anywhere, what's the state, is it working anywhere, is Omaha have any thoughts on that, or is it in their plans? And also, as far as that, is there any sort of planning standards for efficiency standards for planning of new residences and businesses and areas and redesign of old homes? If you could speak to those issues, I'd be grateful. Thank you.
I mentioned the Sustainability Office of the City of Omaha, and those are the kinds of things that that office are, in fact, working on. We have adopted the new environmental element of the master plans, of the city's comprehensive master plan, and there's 600 goals in there. Many of those revolve around energy conservation, effective energy use. I haven't heard a lot about smart grids and so forth. We are in a particularly interesting situation in Nebraska, being a public utility state, and the challenges that creates as far as integrating energy efficiency and those kinds of concepts, and because of a lot of different things. But we have, for example, the state has adopted an energy code, the International Energy Conservation Code. It's a start. It is just a start. And so we are beginning to see that impact as that bubbles down into the city. We have not adopted a new energy code in the city, but we will be as we move forward and implement the environmental plan. The grant that we got from about 2 years ago, a year ago, that the Sustainability Office is integrating has a focus on residential houses and energy efficiency, and trying to get a 25%, I think, is the goal. Ryan, are you still here? I saw Ryan. Is it 25%? 25% reduction in energy use in houses, some commercial. That's a start. So I would encourage you to go to the website and investigate the environmental element and look at all the goals and objectives. Some of the goals were a 20% reduction in energy use, 20% increase in renewable energy use. So there are a lot of goals in there. We just adopted that. That environmental element last year or so. So we're just getting around to start implementing it. As far as city buildings, the same sustainability office got a grant to do 25 City of Omaha buildings. We're doing a performance contract to reduce energy use in those 25 buildings. A lot of it's lighting, a lot of it's controls of the heating and air conditioning. The goals are for substantial savings, reduced. We're measuring it in dollars, but it's reducing the energy usage in city buildings. So that's just the beginning. So I don't know if that begins to answer your question, but yes, there is. We are looking to do more.
We've heard a panel discussion which followed a screening of the 2011 documentary film Urbanized, directed by Gary Hustwit. The event took place at Film Streams, Omaha's nonprofit cinema. This program is recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Wednesday evening, February 1st, 2012, for broadcast at this time. The members of the panel have included Rick Cunningham, Planning Director for the City of Omaha, Sloan Dawson, Transportation Planner at the Metropolitan Area Planning Agency, Ann Trumbull, Founder and Executive Director of Emerging Terrain, and Othello Meadows, Executive Director of 75 North Revitalization Corporation. The moderator was Hesse McGraw, Chief Curator at the Bemis Center for Contemporary Arts. Special thanks to Rachel Jacobson, Casey Logan, and Jim Foyt of Film Streams for helping to make the recording and broadcast of this program possible. Complete Noon Forum listings, as well as an archive of previous broadcasts, are available on our website, kios.org. Now, this is your producer and host, Bob Cote, thanking you for listening.